We're going to have some fun tonight. I can't remember the last time I've been this frenetic. That's the word I'm going to use. Frenetic in terms of my show prep, in terms of articles. You know, I have plenty of stuff to talk about tonight. Most of it having to do with this issue that you've been hearing nonstop throughout the day, throughout the past couple of days. The separation of children from their families, migrant families at the border. But I can't keep up with it. Just when I think we have all the different reference points that we're going to consider here tonight, a new article pops up, and a new article pops up with legitimately new information, like newsworthy information. Donald Trump now has a new proposal, or has signaled his desire to go in a direction that you may not anticipate, particularly if you support his idea of building a wall and getting tough on immigration. Closing argument. My name's Walter Atson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You can catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you tuning in. You can catch up on past shows by doing a search for Closing Argument in your iHeartRadio app, and our channel will pop right up. You can join us this evening, and I think you'll want to. 651-989-5855 is the number. Brad Omland takes those calls and produces the show. Quick programming note before we dive into the topic du jour here. We had promoed on social media, at least, that we were going to be speaking with RNC spokeswoman Kaylee McEnany. And unfortunately, due to some scheduling conflicts, we were not able to get that interview locked down for tonight. We may end up talking to her tomorrow. We were going to preview President Donald Trump's visit to Duluth tomorrow. One way or the other, we will be covering that. And we got some things up in the air in terms of getting some folks in here to review whatever takes place at that rally tomorrow. So look forward to that. All right. So let's dive right into it, shall we? Man, oh man, oh man. So this is where I want to start. Before we get into the news, because it's not as I got to imagine, if you're a listener to this program, you've been following this story and you know the basics. You know that, you know, generally speaking, and I'm trying to contemplate a non-controversial way of even stating what the issue is, because even just the language you use in terms of how you describe it can betray a bias. But, you know, here's my attempt at sanitary, you know, objective journalistic language about what's taking place here. Kids are being separated from their migrant families after illegally crossing the border. That's happening. I think that's a pretty fair statement. Now, there's questions as to why it's happening, whether or not it's appropriate that it's happening, you know, who's politically to blame for it happening, and what have you. And we'll get into all of that here momentarily. But here's where I want to start. I want to start with a political axiom, a life lesson that I have discovered through my own activism, through my own public service, through my own commentary, through just being a human being on this earth and living amongst other people and being an observer of politics. And this is an important thing for us to understand, what I'm about to articulate here. It's important for us to understand as Republicans. It's important for us to understand as conservatives, as libertarians, wherever we fall on that scope. And it's also important for us to understand just as human beings trying to negotiate society in this world. Politically, victory and defeat depends primarily on one factor. And one factor only. And it's not, here's the list of things that it's not, the things that are not going to determine whether or not you win politically. Being right. Okay? Being right, being correct, having the facts on your side, having logic on your side, having an intellectually sound argument. And this produces no shortage of frustration with me personally, because I would love to live in the world where having the best argument won the day, where you actually obtain political victory by being able to demonstrate logically, rationally, that you are correct. That would be fantastic. I don't know that such a political system is even possible, but if it was, I would want to go that route, because, you know, going on the side of reason and logic is going to bode well. Just as it does for individuals, it would bode well for us socially. That said, that's not how it works, right? It's not having the best argument. It's not being correct on an intellectual basis. It's not even having the morally correct argument. Like, being right in a moral sense is not going to win you political victory. This is what will. The one thing, above all else, that will. Swimming with the current of moral conviction. If people think something is right, they will support it. They will demand that policy change in order to affect it. If people think something is wrong, now, I'm not saying here that it is right or that it is wrong. I'm talking about what people think, what people feel. If people think that something is right, they will support it. If people think that something is wrong, they will oppose it. And that current of moral conviction, the sense that society has that something is right or something is wrong, is what will determine who wins and who loses politically. The left knows this. The left understands this. They understand it better than we do on the right. Because what we tend to do on the right, because of our nature, because of the types of people who tend to identify on the political right, is we get bogged down in the argument. You know, what's the name of this show? Closing Argument, right? That was intentional on my part, because I value argument. I believe that having the best argument ought to settle the issue. I promote rationality. I promote logic. I think that's important. That said, I recognize, much to my horror, much to my dismay, that having the best argument does not default to political victory. It's whatever people think is right that's going to prevail. And whatever people think is wrong, if it's been identified as something that is wrong and needs to stop, then supporting that is going to put you on the losing side of history, as the rhetoric around us is so often quick to point out. And so when we come to this issue of children being separated from their families, you know, I've been entertaining a lot of commentary and a lot of media from a lot of different sources on this today, more so than I usually do. I mean, I prep for the show every night, but today, like, the whole day has been prep for the show, in the sense of soaking in all these opinions and all this information and the points and the counterpoints and what have you. And what I observe from the tapestry of conservative opinion is a lot of folks eager to explain why this development of children being separated from families at the border, why it's actually a good thing, why it's legal, why it's appropriate, why it's constitutional, how it was done under the Obama administration, how it's not as bad as it's being characterized by the media, how there are a number of ways in which the media is lying and Democrats are out there lying about the truth of what's taking place at the border and what's driving it and what the implications are. And here's the thing. Many of these claims, many of these arguments that I'm hearing from my conservative brethren today are correct, factually correct, legally correct. They are right. And in a world where being right translated to political victory, this would be a great day for Republicans. But that ain't the world we live in. It's not. The world we live in is one where victory goes to the side that is swimming with the current of moral conviction. And the current of moral conviction is that what's taking place at the border right now is wrong. From Politico, roughly 2/3 of U.S. voters oppose the Trump administration's controversial policy of separating children from their parents who crossed the U.S. border illegally, according to a Quinnipiac poll released on Monday. 66% of those surveyed oppose the policy. The vast majority of Democrats surveyed, 91%, oppose the policy, compared with 35% of Republicans who opposed it. Only 7% of Democratic voters support the policy, while 55% of Republicans support it. So even amongst Republicans, you're basically looking at, you know, if you want to be generous and include the non-committal into the not supporting category, then you basically look at a 50-50 split. And so it's fair to say that the current of moral conviction on this issue is that people are opposed to it. And so, and they're opposed to it on moral reasons. Like the language, you look at the language that's being used to describe what's taking place. You know, some of it is absolutely ridiculous in terms of the level of rhetoric that's being employed. But, you know, the more measured, moderate descriptors of what's taking place is, you know, inhumane, uncaring, lacking empathy, you know, cruel to separate children from their parents. Now, again, forget all the arguments that I know you're shouting at the radio right now. But Walter, this was happening under the Obama administration. But Walter, this is the operation of law. This is what's supposed to take place when adults are charged with a crime. You don't hold, you know, kids don't go to jail with their dad when their dad gets arrested for robbing a liquor store, right? Like, I get that. I'm not saying your argument is wrong. I'm saying being right does not matter to the question of political victory, which is kind of a big deal. This is an election year, right? It's 2018. Midterm elections. The Democrats already have their side riled up. They've been riled up since 2016, right? They've been riled up since before President Trump even won the election. They're ready to go. And now they have a cause. Now they have something to not just rally themselves around, but to rally independents and moderates and grandma and your aunt and your neighbor and the guy down the street, your coworker. They have something to rally all of them around. And it's a sense of moral conviction that something wrong is taking place and that the people who are in charge right now are not doing anything about it and not doing the right thing about it. That's the situation that we find ourselves in right now. And that's the context in which we need to discuss how to respond moving forward. All this before we've even really covered a single headline other than the fact that 66% of U.S. voters oppose the family separations. When we come back, we'll get into the various takes. We'll get into the response. You know, I can't even say the response from the White House because there have been a few, and they're not all consistent in terms of their theme. And we'll talk about, you know, how the Democrats are reacting. We're going to get into this. I want to hear from you as well. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Utzon. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. As we consider the many hot takes and headlines and information surrounding this issue of children being separated from their migrant parents after an illegal border crossing, what we need to keep in mind, what I just laid out at the beginning of the program here tonight, is that politically speaking, political victory or defeat rests upon which side of a given argument is swimming in the direction of the current of moral conviction. If people think something is right, they will support it. If they think it's wrong, they will oppose it. Everything rises and falls based upon that, broadly speaking. There is no amount of explaining. There is no amount of, you know, being scientifically, logically, rationally correct, having the right argument. There's no amount of being correct that will compensate for the sense that something is right or wrong. And the left understands this. This is why their rhetoric is, you know, take a look at anything they have to say on virtually any issue, and they always cast it as a moral issue. They always cast it as this is the right thing to do. As Americans, it's right and proper. You know, Cory Booker, healthcare is a right. in the United States of America, we can't have a situation where somebody needs to get health care and they can't receive it because they can't afford it, right? Like this, we're used to hearing this style of rhetoric, and it's always presented in moral terms. Now, their morality is BS. Their morality is actually immoral. It's evil. But they're able to successfully characterize it as the proper moral position, and people buy into it. And people want to be, we all want to be heroes. We all want to be on the winning team. We all want to be on the side of right. We all want to join the rebellion against the empire, right? Like that's our instinct. That's our aspiration. It begins when we're children. It continues into adulthood. We want to be the good guys. And so politically, when the sense is that the good guys are on this side of a given issue, then that's the side that's going to prevail. This is what we have to keep in mind as we analyze the status quo here regarding this situation at the border and the separation of families. Not who's right and who's wrong, you know, in terms of the law and how it's being applied and the history and the context. Those things are important. Don't get me wrong. They're profoundly important, but they're not politically determinative. And we happen to be discussing this in the context of an important midterm election season. So that said, let's go to the National Review. Now, this is, from what I've seen, the definitive rebuke of all the left-wing concern about separating kids. The title here by Rich Lowry at National Review is "The Truth About Separating Kids." He writes, "The latest fervor over Trump immigration policy involves the separation of children from parents at the border. As usual, the outrage obscures more than it illuminates, so it's worth walking through what's happening here. For the longest time, illegal immigration was driven by single males from Mexico. Over the last decade, the flow has shifted to women, children, and family units from Central America. This poses challenges we haven't confronted before and has made what once were relatively minor wrinkles in the law loom very large. The Trump administration isn't changing the rules that pertain to separating an adult from the child. Those remain the same. Separation happens only if officials find that the adult is falsely claiming to be the child's parent or is a threat to the child or, and this is the key point, is put into criminal proceedings. It's the last that is operative here. The past practice had been to give a free pass to an adult who is part of a family unit. The new Trump policy is to prosecute all adults." This is the zero tolerance policy that you're hearing so much about. The Jeff Sessions special, as it were. We're going to prosecute anyone who crosses the border, regardless of context, regardless of circumstance. We're going to put them through a criminal prosecution. That is why, under the operation of law, you're seeing children separated from the adults they came across with, whether those adults are parents or not. Continuing at National Review. "The idea here is to send a signal that we are serious about our laws and to create a deterrent against reentry. When a migrant is prosecuted for illegal entry, he or she is taken into custody by the U.S. Marshals. In no circumstance anywhere in the U.S. do the marshals care for the children of people they take into custody. The child is taken into the custody of HHS, who cares for them at temporary shelters. The criminal proceedings are exceptionally short, assuming there is no aggravating factor, such as a prior illegal entity or another crime. The migrants generally plead guilty, and they are then sentenced to time served, typically all in the same day, although practices vary along the border. After this, they are returned to the custody of ICE. If the adult then wants to go home, in keeping with the expedited order of removal that is issued as a matter of course, it's relatively simple. The adult should be reunited quickly with his or her child and the family returned home as a unit. In this scenario, there's only a very brief separation. Where it becomes much more of an issue is if the adult files an asylum claim. In that scenario, the adults are almost certainly going to be detained longer than the government is allowed to hold their children. That's because of something called the Flores Consent Decree from 1997. It says that unaccompanied children can be held only 20 days. A ruling by the Ninth Circuit extended this 20-day limit to children who come as part of family units. So even if we want to hold a family unit together, we are forbidden from doing so. Now, this is the point that this is the basis of President Trump's assertion that it's the Democrats' fault that children are being separated from their families. He's pointing to this Flores consent decree and saying, see, my hands are tied. You know, as the executive, I have to follow the law. And the law says that regardless of whether or not it's actually their parents or not, we can only hold it for 20 days. So blame Bill Clinton for that. Blame the Democrats for that. Now, like so much great political rhetoric, this is the that's true. Like the, just those words, the content of what he's saying is factually correct. But here's a problem. The effect of the number of children, you know, this surge in children being separated from their families, that was not caused by the Flores consent decree. The reason we're having these headlines in this discussion right now is not because of a law that was passed in 1997. It's because of a policy that was put into place by this White House, and that's the zero tolerance policy. It's because every single adult who's crossing the border illegally is being prosecuted that it triggers this process under the operation of law whereby children are being separated from their families. So while it is indeed true that the Democrats came up with the law that the administration is operating under as they pursue their zero tolerance policy, it's the zero tolerance policy that has triggered this wave of children being separated from their families. And so, you know, both of those things are true. Both of them. It's true that the Democrats came up with the law that's in effect. It's also true that the zero tolerance policy coming out of this administration is the reason why that law is being utilized to physically take kids from their parents today in mass. That's the context. And so by highlighting, and both sides, both the Democratic opposition and the White House and Republicans are both lying through admission. You know, they're claiming only the side of this reality that makes them look good and makes the other side look bad. And so as a result, everybody's able to retreat to their moral high corners of moral high ground and claim that they're right and the other side is wrong without addressing the actual underlying concern of what's taking place. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Can't explain all the feelings that you're making me feel. My heart's in overdrive and you're behind the steering wheel. See, what we see here with this issue on immigration, where the Trump administration has instituted this zero tolerance policy at the border and is prosecuting every adult involved in an illegal crossing. And as a result, under the operation of law, under law that was put in place by Democrats, that part of the Trump response is correct. You know, kids are being separated from their families, from the adults who are claiming them, at least, at the border. What's happening here is that, you know, this situation is creating a scenario very similar to the issue of abortion in terms of how the public is responding to it, where all of the arguments on one side of the other flow from fundamental premises. With abortion, the premises are this: either you believe that unborn children are human persons who are deserving of protection, whose lives matter and who ought to be protected. You either believe that or you don't. And based upon whether or not you believe that, your argumentation flows from that premise, flows from that belief. So if you don't think that the thing that's in there, the thing that's inside the mother, is actually a human child deserving of protection, then the pro-choice argument makes perfect sense. It's logical, right? Like, if that premise is correct, that the thing inside the mom is just a thing and not a person, then everything the pro-choice side claims is morally correct and flows logically. If, however, you maintain that that thing inside the mother is not a thing at all, that in fact it's a human being, a person deserving of protection, then the pro-choice argument is reprehensible and needs to be defeated. And this, being locked into those premises, this is why one of the rules of thumb in talk radio is you don't talk about abortion because there's nowhere to go with it, right? Like people have made up their minds on that central premise of whether or not the unborn child is a child or not. And based upon what they think on that question, you're never going to be able to, the person who thinks that that's actually a human being in the womb is never going to be convinced of the pro-choice argument, because it would be a reprehensible, they would be an evil person if you thought that that's a human being and then all of a sudden you adopt the pro-choice position. That would be evil on your part, right? And consequently, if you're on the pro-choice side and you don't think that an unborn child is actually a human being, it would be morally problematic for you to accept pro-life positions, because now you're going to encroach upon the rights of the mother and encroach upon the rights of human beings to engage in, you know, whatever reproductive choices they want. And so there's no room to move on that issue. Immigration is very similar. And specifically, this question of the families being separated, the children being separated from their families at the border, is very similar in that the arguments for or against are based on a central premise. And that premise is this. Should people be able to cross the border? Yes or no? Is it a moral imperative? Do you have the right as an individual to travel freely? If your answer to that question is yes, then what you see happening at the border is an atrocity. If your answer to that question is no, then what you see happening at the border is perfectly acceptable and just another day in under the auspices of law and order. And whichever of those two ideas you subscribe to, the premise that you adopt is going to determine where you land, and you're never going to be convinced. You're never going to be pulled over to the other side unless you reevaluate that central premise. That said, I think what we're seeing here in terms of 66% of people polled disagreeing with what's taking place right now, it reflects the fact that even if you, regardless of where you sit on the central premise of whether or not people freely ought to be able to cross the border, there's a sense that crossing illegally, even if you think it's a crime, is not a crime that ascends to the level that justifies this sort of consequence. That's why what I call the current of moral conviction, you know, the political winds seem to be blowing against the Trump administration here and against Republicans and against the status quo of what's taking place here with the zero tolerance policy. Because people have the sense, even if they believe that we ought to have restrictions on immigration, it's proper to deport people who come here illegally, especially if you catch them at the border, that the crime of crossing without permission, of crossing illegally, does not elevate to the point where it justifies terrifying a 2-year-old, terrifying a 4-year-old. And, you know, you're going to have a hard time convincing people otherwise when that's what they believe. Let's talk to John in Minneapolis. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, my comment is this. So this whole no exception policy that Trump has rolled out has been his idea since day one. So this isn't new to anyone. It's just unfortunate that with what's taking place, that, you know, it's exacerbated into a bigger issue. But people were well aware of this worldwide. So, you know, for the Mexican government, you know, when people coming from Central America are coming up through Mexico, it's the Mexican government that's a problem as well, because they're allowing those people to travel freely, in a sense, through their country to get to the United States. And the other thing is there tends to be a big problem when people mix their moral thoughts with what is actually legal or what is the law?
I'm very, very interested in that. Expound upon that.
And so, for example, if you know, the law is you have to be 21 or older to drink, correct?
Right, right.
So if I don't feel like, well, hey, you know, I'm only 19, so screw it, I'm going to go ahead and drink.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people's morals as far as what they believe in,
mm-hmm.
In most cases contradicts what the law is. And if you really look at it, that if you look at crimes committed, I can pretty much assure you that the left, as a percentage of the total crimes, is higher than it is on the right side.
I would be interested in seeing those statistics. I haven't seen anything to substantiate that, but I understand I understand the essential point you're trying to make. My question would be, which direction, what's the order of operation here? Because, you know, we've seen a lot of rhetoric, particularly we had the statement from Jeff Sessions about, you know, you citing Romans 13 to justify what's taking place here. Is the order of operation what is legal determines what is moral, or is the order of operation what is moral properly ought to determine what is legal?
The order is what is moral should impact what the laws are.
Okay. I think most people would agree with you.
And so in the current situation, the laws are the laws. And people are now saying, well, that's morally, I don't agree with that.
Right.
Well, okay, that's fine. So talk to your state legislator or your federal representative and get the laws passed so that they coincide with what your moral beliefs are.
I appreciate the call, John. Appreciate the thoughts. Yeah. Look, I agree that if you believe, I mean, that's what political activism is, right? Nobody involved in political activism is content with the status quo. If they were, they would spend time at home with their family, engaging their favorite hobby, you know, hanging out in some other endeavor. Why would you waste your time in politics if you were satisfied with the status quo? The reason why people get engaged is because they perceive this disparity between what morally ought to be and what legally currently is the status quo. And so there's always this tension between what people perceive as the right thing to do, the right way to do things, and the way things are. And it's correct that in an orderly society, a relatively free society, the proper way to affect change is by advocating for it through the governing process, through the electoral process and legislative process. That said, what I see happening here with this issue of kids being separated from their parents at the border is a lot of reversing of that order of operation, where they're not saying this is moral, therefore that's the law. They're saying this is the law, therefore that makes it okay. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. We'll talk with Mike in Farmington when we return. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Roughly two-thirds of U.S. voters oppose the Trump administration's controversial policy of separating children from their parents who cross the U.S. border illegally, according to a poll released on Monday, that from Politico. And, you know, that's what we've been talking about tonight. I pointed out at the top of the show that in my observation, and I think this bears out, I think this is a time-tested theory, political victory goes to the side that finds itself swimming with the current of moral conviction. If people believe something is right, they will support it. Conversely, if they believe something is wrong, they will rise in opposition to it. And so when you're on the side of the angels in the perception of the public, in the perception of the voter, you're going to do all right. When you're not, well, things are going to go against you. And with that general political axiom acknowledged, the question becomes, where do we find ourselves with this situation of children being separated from their parents at the border after an illegal crossing? And what I'm suggesting to you is that the reason why two-thirds of American voters are opposed to this, it's for one of two reasons. It's either because their fundamental premise upon which they base their view of immigration is that people ought to be able to cross. Like, they just fundamentally believe that it's a human right, that freedom of travel necessitates the ability of people to be able to cross the border if they so desire. And we're going to get into here next hour the libertarian case as published at the Washington Post for open borders. That'll be, I'm sure you guys are going to be real fascinated with that. But, you know, they subscribe to that premise. That's one reason why they fit into this 2/3 of voters who oppose this. Or they do think there ought to be some immigration restrictions, or perhaps they even support the status quo. Perhaps they even support building the wall, right? Maybe they're Trump voters. Maybe they're Trump supporters. It was like 35% of Republicans who are opposed to this policy, according to this poll. But the reason why they find themselves opposed to it isn't necessarily because they're for open borders. It's because they have this sense of disproportionality, that the enduring the imposition, the burden, the trial of being separated from your child, and, you know, worse, the child having to endure being separated from their parents, is too high of a price to pay, too high of a penalty to exact for the crime of crossing the border, illegal or otherwise. Let's go to the phone, 651-989-5855. Mike's been holding for quite some time. Appreciate it. From Farmington, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Walter.
Yep.
I guess I look at this in a larger context, in a broader time span. What I see going on with the media is the Russian collusion narrative is pretty much dead, and we got to gear up for the election here that's coming. So the Democrats and the media structure, they're gonna run with this. They're gonna keep going with this and going with this, but I go back to who is to blame. Who brought the kids here? We didn't fly them in. We didn't travel them through the Mexico and these countries.
Right.
And I look at the previous administration of Barack Obama.
Right.
There's been an effort to bring these people and dangle a carrot to have them come here. I'm curious why I don't hear any criticism in the media of these parents or these traffickers and anger being directed towards these people, because they're the ones that are putting the kids through this. Mm-hmm. They're putting them into this situation. And here's a novel idea, folks. Follow the law. There's a law. I'm sure you and Brad, you believe in property rights, but how would you feel if, hey, Mike shows up with 7 of his buddies and says, hey, you know, I need a place to crash, and you guys don't mind putting me up and feeding me and paying for all my stuff, do you? While I get things worked out. You're good with that, right? We've got to have some order, and I think part of this zero-tolerance thing is people have had enough lawlessness of this. This has gone on for decades, and, you know, maybe it seems a little drastic, but there's plenty of people whose mothers and fathers every day go to prison. Mm-hmm. Their kids aren't being held with them,
right,
detained with them.
Right.
And the other part of it, people want to talk about morality. Well, for it to be moral, don't we have to mutually respect each other and enter into a contract? I see with people coming here, they just don't have any respect for our laws. They think they can just get in. Their first act is a criminal act. And there's countless stories of where's the concern for the American citizens whose moms, dads, brothers, and sisters have been killed by illegal aliens. And this has gone on for decades. And I think people have finally said, you know what, at least on my side of the fence, are saying enough is enough. People need to follow the law and respect the law. And just like the secretary said, there's a way to claim asylum. You go to ports of entry. You don't do it illegally. There's a process to do it. And they're not doing that.
I appreciate the call as always, Mike. And Mike offers a great example of the point of view that is built upon the premise that the law is the law, right? This is the order of operation where the law is what defines the morality. This is the current law, therefore it's wrong to cross. And because you crossed, you have to endure the consequence, which can include being separated from your children. Now, the reason why that's not going to convince people on the other side, why that's not going to convince people in the middle who, you know, don't have a predisposition one way or the other, is because it's based upon the premise that crossing the border illegally is a crime worthy of this consequence. We got to question our premises here. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. This is shaping up to be a single issue show tonight, which I had a sneaking suspicion it probably would be, given the different angles and the amount of content there is on this issue of children being separated from their families after illegal crossings as an outgrowth of the zero tolerance policy that's been put into place by the Trump administration, much to the delight of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We've been discussing it here on Closing Argument. My name's Walter Atson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You can catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. It's great having you with us. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. Brad Omland takes those calls and produces the show. Let's go straight to Tom in Eden Prairie. Thanks for holding.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. You seem to be able to communicate how I feel very particularly, so thank you for what you do.
Well, I appreciate that. It's good to know that it's understood and sometimes shared.
Yeah, absolutely. Say, you know, I wanted to just share some thoughts. This whole outrage, the moral outrage,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so obvious that it's political cover and distraction and, hey, look over here, shiny. And I think, I mean, I hope maybe I'm convincing myself that it's going to backfire, because ultimately all this attention is going to hopefully end up with an immigration law change and a package ending up on President Trump's desk.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting you should say that. That's a good segue into a couple of stories we have here, and I'll just, you know, summarize them quickly. One from Politico: President Donald Trump told House Republicans to send him an immigration bill dealing with Dreamers and migrant families being separated at the border in a freewheeling address Tuesday, giving GOP leadership what it hopes was the green light it needed to pass legislation that's infuriated the far right. Now, the general gist of this is that, you know, Trump is on board with getting something passed, presumably because he wants to see something done about this fervor. It talks about how Ivanka Trump has, you know, come into the Oval Office and expressed her concern over this issue. But then here's the Democratic response, as reported by the Daily Wire. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer rejected a GOP legislative proposal on Tuesday that would fix the border separation issue that has consumed the national news cycle over the weekend. He said, there are so many obstacles to legislation, and when the president can do it with his own pen, it makes no sense. Legislation is not the way to get here when it's so easy for the president to sign it. So the cynical, but I think no doubt accurate way to interpret this is that the Democrats don't want to see a legislative fix.
Right.
Because they want to see this continue as something that they can campaign on all the way to November. And they also want to successfully characterize this in the public discourse as something that is exclusively President Trump's fault, and put the onus completely on him and pretend as though there's nothing they can do about it.
Well, shouldn't a senator be afraid of encouraging a president to enact law? I mean, the whole separation, the way our government works, the legislative branch makes the laws. A senator should always oppose any executive order. You should not want executive orders. It's a bad idea.
You would think so. You would think so. But, you know, then again, the Democrats have never been particularly afraid of executive power. You know, if there's two things legislators, particularly lefty legislators, like, it's giving the executive power, because they all aspire to ascend to that office and be able to wield the power themselves. And then also kicking it out to administrative bureaucratic bodies that can make decisions without any sort of political consequence. Because that puts them in the position of being able to throw up their hands and be like, hey, it wasn't us.
Well, they've completely then corrupted what our political representation is supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
The people, by the people, for the people.
Right.
Nowhere in there it's for my own best interest at heart. I mean, but that's apparently what they are.
Appreciate the call, Tom. Thanks again for holding on. Let's talk to David in St. Paul. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. I have a question. Have you heard anything about the previous administration having not had documented the children in such a way that when children were essentially taken away to places where they could theoretically live, like foster care or orphanages or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that there's no records of it, the actual names of these children. And some of these children have been, later on now, discovered to have been sold into child prostitution and that sort of thing?
No, I don't know anything about the last little tidbit there of child prostitution, sex trafficking. But I do recall seeing a headline come through our stack here in the not too distant past that described what you're talking about in terms of, you know, the way they characterize it was children were lost, children were unaccounted for in the system. And if I recall the way it was portrayed correctly, it seemed to be an intentional policy on the part of the Obama administration to kind of, you know, see no evil, hear no evil on it, that they didn't want to keep track of these children. They wanted it out of their hands, and so they just kind of intentionally set themselves up to lose track.
Well, doesn't that lend itself to some potential shenanigans going on with those children then?
Well, sure.
Apparently there's news reports and confirmed police reports that at least some of these children that apparently claimed they were in those circumstances when they came into the country, ending up in those kind of situations,
mm-hmm.
Houston and other cities. And I guess the thing is, my understanding is that Trump actually wants to document everybody.
Yeah.
So they don't, well, that's a huge point.
Yeah, no, I hear you, David, and the point is duly considered. Appreciate the call. The reason why Trump isn't getting moral credit for that, though, is because it's difficult to sell the idea that Trump's primary concern is the well-being of the children, given the optics of children currently visibly, audibly being torn away from their families at ages like 2-4 years old, crying. I mean, look, I remember a couple of years back, we took our kids, it was like four generations of our family went to Disney World together. You know, it was this big trip that had been planned for quite some time. And at the time, my youngest was two or three years old. And we went to, at some point, I think it was on the way back, we went through security at the Orlando airport. And for whatever reason, I was flagged. And I was pulled out of the line and I was separated. And I'm not talking about the kind of separation that's happening at the border. I'm talking about being pulled off. Like I was within line of sight of my children, but I was taken some distance from them. And they're enough for them to have the perception of people are taking daddy away. Right. That's all it was. And it lasted maybe, I don't know, however long it took them to pat me down. And the whole time I'm comforting my kids and I'm telling them everything's okay and what have you. It was not a huge ordeal, but my kids were scared. My kids required comfort. My kids were to a degree terrified. And frankly, I resented it, right? Because I'm not a criminal. Right. There, as far as I knew, you know, perhaps there's some information, some reason for suspicion that I was unaware of. But as far as I knew, I wasn't doing anything that was suspect. There was no reason to give me extra attention. And that stuck with me. And that was something that left an impression, and it left an impression on my kids. When you extrapolate that experience, that relatively minor travel experience, just with the TSA, and you imagine what it must be like for these kids, similar age as mine were when I traveled with them, you know, just within the United States as a citizen, being torn away from their families, being torn away from their mom and their dad, that's pretty bad. That's pretty traumatic. And so the reason why Trump isn't getting moral credit for, you know, wanting to document everybody and keep track of the kids and try to, you know, clamp down on sex trafficking, human trafficking, and what have you, is because all of those outcomes, because again, remember the premise that we started the show with tonight. Politically speaking, it's not whether or not your argument is correct. It's whether or not there's a general sense of moral conviction supporting you. And when you have to sit here and you have to explain, you know, the 4 degrees of 4D chess of how this is actually a good thing, and you're doing that in a context where people are seeing something that they have a visceral emotional reaction to, which is the separation of children, they relate to it. You know, what if that was me? What if that was my kid? What if I was in that situation? You're not going to be able to counter that emotion with a logical argument of why it's okay and why it's right. And so politically, there is this necessity for the administration and for Republicans to fall back, so to speak, to regroup, to come up with a new approach to how they're going to solve the immediate problem, and in the long term, what they're going to do about immigration going forward. They have to get on the same page, and they have to be consistent going into the rest of this 2018 midterm election year, because this is going to be an issue on people's minds in November, unless there's some kind of resolution. Now, the Democrats, obviously, as indicated by Chuck Schumer's response to Republican efforts to do something legislatively, the Democrats don't want to see this issue settled, which, by the way, let's pause to appreciate how morally reprehensible that is, right? Like, if the worst characterization of what the Trump administration is doing at the border is true, you know, if it's Nazi-esque, if it's analogous to, you know, Japanese internment camps in World War II, you know, if it's causing all this trauma to children being ripped away from their families, you know, as I just described, if all of that is true, and the Democrats have an opportunity to do something about it, and their answer is no, what does that say about them? Right? Now, that presents a political opportunity, which hopefully will be leveraged by the White House and by Republicans, to point out the lack of sincerity on behalf of Chuck Schumer, the lack of sincerity on behalf of the Democrats, that they don't actually care about these children. They don't actually care about these families. For them, it's entirely about the politics. And they want to maintain. They would like to see. This is a true statement. What I'm about to say is 100% correct. Chuck Schumer would rather see four-year-olds ripped out of their mother's arms from now through November than to pursue a legislative solution that would prevent that from happening. That is a correct statement. I would bet my bottom dollar on it that that is absolutely the heart and soul and mind of Chuck Schumer, and probably indicative of Democrats everywhere, because their primary consideration is the politics, not the morality. But be that as it may, we have to recognize that, you know, not everybody is in that camp. There are voters who, you know, when you got 66% of voters who are against this thing, it's not because they're all Democratic operatives. It's not because they're all never Trumpers. It's not because they're all un-American and believe in open borders. It's because they have a legitimate moral perception that what's taking place at the border is wrong. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us this evening. We've been talking at length and in depth regarding the situation at the border. separation of children from their families after illegal crossings. Let's talk to Barry in St. Paul. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. So I'm no expert in this or anything, but I thought the way refugees claim refugee status worked was the first country that you landed in, other than the country you're trying to flee from, what the country you're supposed to apply for refugee status in. Isn't that most of these guys that are coming up from south of Mexico, isn't that Mexico that they're supposed to be asking for refugee status from?
Well, I can acknowledge that many of these immigrants are coming from Central America. They're coming from south of Mexico. As far as whether or not there's some sort of proper protocol to seek asylum in the first country that isn't the one oppressing you, that I do not know. Well, I mean, it seems logical, but I don't know that that's the case.
Isn't that the whole argument that Europe was trying to make with Turkey? You know, with them sending all the refugees over, that they're supposed to be asking for refugee status in Turkey, and that them not staying in Turkey is just because they're really economic refugees. They're trying to get away from a country where they don't have a real future. They're trying to move to a country that they do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's definitely an argument that people could make. If there's no if you can't argue that you're being oppressed in Turkey, then why are you moving on to go into Europe? And similarly, if you can't argue that you're being oppressed in Mexico, then why are you moving on to come to the United States? That does seem to indicate.
And aren't the Democrats acknowledging that by, like, if you listen to NPR and stuff, they say, well, now this immigrant problem is going to increase because our unemployment rate is getting closer to full employment. We're getting closer to full employment, so more people are going to want to come here. Isn't that an acknowledgement of people are coming here because they want a better life, not because they're running from something else?
Right.
That's what I don't understand.
I appreciate the call, Barry. Yeah, what's happening there is, again, you know, this is an issue that people are viewing, broadly speaking, through one of two moral prisms. And it's either the prism of you ought to be able to pursue that economic value. You ought to be able to travel freely. The border should not be a barrier to trade and to relationship. There's that premise that people are looking through. And so if that's your premise that you're starting from, then of course you're going to believe, you know, what NPR is slinging, right? Conversely, if you disagree with that and you have a different premise, you know, the premise of we need to protect the integrity of the nation by keeping people out and ensuring that the culture remains intact, or whatever your argument is in favor of building the wall, then you're not going to accept the argument that, you know, people are seeking genuine refuge from some sort of hardship. Let's talk to Stephen in Hopkins. Welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. How are you tonight?
Good.
They're not speaking about the parents at all, and who, you know, So the story is, the kids are taken away from their parents. Is that 100% of the kids? Is that 10% of the kids? And we don't have all the numbers for
100%.
That.
100%. Well, the policy, that the reason this came into being is because the White House instituted this zero tolerance policy that any adult found to be crossing the border illegally is going to be prosecuted. And because they're being prosecuted, the operation of law calls for any children traveling with them to be separate, because you're not charging the kids. The kids aren't facing charges. The adults are. And so, you know, just like you're not gonna take my, you know, if I'm charged with robbing a bank, you're not going to take my kids and throw them in jail with me. You're going to take me and the kids are going to be somewhere else. And that's what's happening here. So to Brad's point, it is 100% when you have a zero tolerance policy.
Okay. After the immigrants that are trying to cross over are charged, then they go to court, and then how soon are the kids handed over to them again?
It depends on how their case plays out. In the case that, you know, we had the National Review had a piece where they described it as, in this scenario where there are no mitigating circumstances, there's no, you know, previous criminal history or other thing that would hold the process up, and the person pleads guilty and is sentenced to time served and begins the process of being sent back, they're going to be reunited with their kids fairly quickly. But if there's any sort of mitigating circumstances, including an asylum claim, then that could end up holding up their processing for quite some time. past the 20-day limit that the law requires the kids to be no longer held in custody by the law enforcement authorities.
Okay. And I believe it had started in the 90s, right?
97.
It almost sounds like it's the press trying to hunt for a story to try to frame Trump in a bad light, in like it's the gotcha story. Like, oh, and we finally got him on something.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's absolutely no doubt that there's unmitigated political opportunism at play here. There's no doubt about it. The question becomes, though, you know, is it effective? And I think it is. I think I don't know that this is the thing that's going to take down Trump. It's probably not, right? It may be the thing that costs Republicans the House, you know, in this midterm election. That could be a problem. That could be a consequence. But, you know, whether or not the Democrats and the media are engaged in a bad faith effort to paint the administration in a negative light, that's beyond question. But it doesn't really matter to the question of whether or not this is a political problem that needs to be solved.
Okay. Then the question is, how do we solve it?
Exactly.
Well,
do you have any ideas?
Trump could just take...
You know, I just say, I would say it take on the media. You know, in the same way he got elected,
sure.
He did not apologize.
Double down, yeah.
For his beliefs. You know, and, you know, if you came to this country and you had gone through the process, you know, and you did it the right way, and you see all the people crossing the border, and you just kind of shake your head. You know, it's like, I came into this country the correct way. How come all these other people can't do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get extremely frustrated with that.
I understand, and I appreciate you calling the program as well. Brad, you had some thoughts.
Trump could just take the political victory away from Democrats by changing his policy. He could end the zero tolerance policy,
right. And
suddenly Democrats would have nothing to talk about.
Right.
And it's having second and third order effects because people at border states, in other states where Republicans in those states who are now suddenly pressed up against the issue of siding against Trump or doing what they think is right,
mm-hmm.
and risking this Republicans have to win or else philosophy that Trump supporters seem to tout. So they're working against themselves. And the...
This is one of those examples where... Is the media out there looking for something to inflate? Of course they are.
Yeah, no.
But,
well, yes, but no.
This is also an unforced error, politically.
Right. It's an issue now because Trump is making it an issue. He's pushing the limits of the law. And this has been his entire MO, his entire presidency. He looks up, or him and Jeff Sessions will look up a policy and dig and dig and dig and dig until they find the little thing that says, oh yeah, that's legal, you can do it. Or if there's no ruling on it, Trump will just say, oh yeah, I can do that, I'm the president, and then let the courts decide. And I mean, it's kind of a smart move because when the courts decide, it's a 50-50 coin flip of, is Trump going to get his way or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if Trump gets his way, he can say, oh, look, I'm so smart, I'm a genius, like, I've had this power all along, look at me. And if he's wrong and the court rules against him, he can say, oh, look at that, those liberal justices, the Democrats are ruining again. And he can drum up support from that again. And then he just has to go back and tweak the law a little bit and try to push that through again and see what happens.
The difference between previous instances and this one is that he seems to have tripped into an issue where the again, that current of moral conviction that I keep going back to, that sense of what's right and what's wrong, is against him broadly. It crosses the partisan divide. It's
right.
Not Republican, Democrat. It's not people who are for border controls versus people who are for open borders. It's everybody, two-thirds of American voters, who are saying this isn't right. This needs to change. And that's a situation that I don't think Trump has found himself in before, at least to this degree.
Yeah.
Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, 651-989-5855. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. You can catch up on past shows by searching for Closing Argument in your iHeartRadio app. Our channel has past interviews, past shows for you there. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. Brad Ullman takes those calls and produces the show. We've been talking at length and in depth regarding the controversy at the border, the separation of children from their families after illegal crossings. Let's talk to Stuart in Robbinsdale. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. Somebody just mentioned on your last segment that Trump could take away the power of the Democrats by simply reversing the zero tolerance policy. And I'm not really sure exactly what the implications of that are, because it sounds like if you undo the zero tolerance policy, then that means that you are just letting all of the folks come in and not actually charging them with a crime, because otherwise, if you charge them with a crime, you obviously can't keep the kids in prison. And I wonder what your thoughts were on that, or maybe I just misunderstood what the guy said.
No, yeah, I appreciate it. That's actually a great segue into exactly the direction I wanted to go. Appreciate the call, Stuart. We have a piece over at Reason. The headline gives the prescription. America needs to declare zero tolerance for Trump's border abuses. And the way this came up in social media was, America needs to declare zero tolerance for zero tolerance policies. They write, zero tolerance policies have been spreading throughout America for the last 40 years, wreaking havoc wherever and whenever they've been tried. That's because their fundamental premise is that the cause they aim to advance is so righteous that authorities have impunity to go after minor offenses with maximum force. It should come as no surprise, then, that the results would be deeply ugly now that the world's most powerful leader has deployed a zero tolerance policy against the world's most powerless people, fleeing migrants. Zero tolerance became all the rage in the 1980s when President Ronald Reagan launched his war on drugs, and the smallest drug offenses got treated like existential threats to the fabric of American society. This led to mandatory minimum sentencing laws that turned America into the incarceration capital of the world by stripping judges of any discretion in keeping sentences commensurate with the crime. The upshot has been that nonviolent drug offenders like Alice Johnson, whom President Trump granted clemency last week after 20 years in jail, got a life without parole sentence. There are millions like her languishing in jail. Now, the central premise here that's being offered by the author here at Reason is that the problem with zero tolerance policies is that they take discretion out of the question. Discretion is no longer a part of consideration. The only thing that's considered under a zero tolerance policy, it's binary. It's, are you guilty or not? And so when you have this zero tolerance policy of people crossing the border, it's, you're guilty, therefore you're going to be subject to all of the consequences prescribed under the law. And we can argue about where the law came from and what the history of the law is and whether or not it's appropriate or inappropriate. But the fact remains, you can't take into consideration any mitigating circumstances. You can't take into consideration the fact that they're crossing with their kids. You can't take into consideration your sense of whether or not they're a criminal threat to anyone. You have to just be binary. They're guilty or they're innocent. And the problem with this from a justice perspective is that it's this notion of a sentence commensurate with the crime. That's what the object of the justice system ought to be, right? Like, when one of the images that is conjured when we talk about justice is the balancing of scales. The reason why that's the imagery we choose to portray justice is because what we properly ought to be seeking is balance. When somebody acts in a way that disrupts the balance, that encroaches upon the rights of somebody else, that deprives somebody of something that is theirs by right, the purpose of the justice system is to make them whole. And the punitive aspect of that should be to ultimately, frankly, to restore the perpetrator as well, to restore them to a position where they can go forward and act in a lawful and contributing manner to the rest of society. And so much of the way our justice system works broadly does not abide by that concept or that principle at all. And zero tolerance policies are a big part of that, because when you have this automatic catch-all response to a particular crime, doesn't matter what the crime is, when you have this automatic catch-all response to it, then there is no consideration of how the scales have been knocked out of balance. It no longer becomes about balance. It becomes about retribution, which is not what our justice system should involve. Let's talk to Greg in Columbia Heights. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Walter. I'm trying to think now tonight as I'm listening to this, you know, the moral argument. I'm trying to think how many families and people that are still living in this country that have gone through immigration the legal way.
Right.
And I can't remember what the cost is, but I've heard it can be tens of thousands of dollars, you know, by the time you get a family mm-hmm. in through that process. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking the moral argument is now for those folks to argue against the citizens of the United States, that they were immorally treated by having to pay the burden of these costs while other people are not apparently mm-hmm. having to concur or incur those type of costs. So there's an immorality balance there. So mm-hmm. I think they need to make the moral and say, you know, what is good for you should be good for me. So in other words, these folks who have paid tens of thousands of dollars should be lining up at the doors of the U.S. Federal Treasury and the taxpayers of this country and demanding a refund for all their. If this is what we're going to have, say the left wants the open borders, immigration free flowing, then these people need to be reimbursed if they're still living. That would be the moral argument for me.
I appreciate the contribution. Thanks, Walter. It's a fantastic concept to kick around here, and here's my response to that. Because that's very indicative of arguments that are commonly put forward, you know, not only when it comes to an issue like immigration, you know, well, what about all the people who came here the right way? What about all the people who paid their dues, right? You know, don't they deserve to be treated properly? Isn't this an injustice to them if we suddenly, you know, allow some form of amnesty or another? It's very similar to my mind to arguments in favor of the status quo on Social Security, where you'll get people who say, well, I paid in, right? Like, I paid in, so I'm deserving of my check. Well, what happened was you were victimized, much as Greg just described. You know, the people who had to jump through. Now, this is all based upon the premise, right? The premise that there shouldn't be as onerous as restrictions on immigration as there currently is today. If we accept that premise for the sake of argument, then the people who have had to jump through the hoops, the people who have had to pay their dues, were treated unjustly and indeed would be entitled to some sort of recompense, some sort of being made whole as a result of that. If that's the case, if that's the premise you're going to operate under, that certainly doesn't justify continuing the status quo. It doesn't justify continuing to set up even further barriers and building another wall or whatever the case may be in order to make it even harder for people in the future. You know, you don't get to make the argument of, well, I was harmed, therefore other people should be harmed in order to make it fair, right? This is the, you know, the eye for an eye so the whole world's blind type of reasoning or misread of that biblical principle. If the injustice is on the side of the people who have been, who have, or if the injustice has been perpetrated against the people who have gone through the system before, then the way you set that right is by taking away the existing injustice, not by adding to it into the future. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. As I suspected when I looked at the stack of stuff for tonight, there's just too much. There's just too much on this one topic of immigration and the separation of children from the families at the borders to cover in one evening. And so we're going to have to move on for this final segment of tonight. Maybe we'll get into tomorrow, because I never even got to. I tweeted out right before we went on the air tonight this Washington Post article, The Libertarian Case for Open Borders, which is provocative and fascinating. And I'm really interested in getting people's opinions about it, getting your opinion about it. I've already gotten some feedback on Facebook from having posted it that I'm eager to share with you as well and to respond to. Maybe we'll get into that tomorrow. We'll see what the news cycle does. But it's definitely worth taking a look at. If you can find it on Twitter, hashtag TCNT. Very interesting article. But I wanted to share a couple things with you guys tonight on our way out the door this evening. The first one is, have you seen this political ad for Richard Painter for U.S. Senate? He's seeking the office, I believe, currently held by Tina Smith.
Yes.
And if you don't know about Richard Painter, he's a guy who is pretty prominent on, you know, MSNBC and more of the mainstream media as a Trump critic. I believe he was formerly served in the Trump administration, or I'm sorry, the Bush administration, George W. Bush, in some capacity. And so, you know, having that Republican establishment background gives him nice bona fides when he goes on MSNBC to complain about Donald Trump. And now he's switched parties. He's a Democrat now, and he's challenging their endorsed candidate in the primary. And I can't do this ad justice playing it for you on the radio. Like, you have to see it in order to get the full impact. But the audio gives you a pretty good sense of just how cartoonish this campaign is. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
Some people see a dumpster fire and do nothing but watch the spectacle. Some are too scared to face the danger, or they think it will benefit them if they just let it keep on burning. Others shrug and say, oh, all this talk of a dumpster fire, it's just fake news. There is an inferno raging in Washington. But here in the land of 10,000 lakes, we know how to put out a fire.
I am Richard Painter, and I approve of this message.
So the imagery is he's standing in front of a literal dumpster fire throughout the ad. And then at the point where he says, in a land of 10,000 lakes, a bunch of water dumps out of the sky and puts out the dumpster fire. He says, we know how to put out a fire, which I don't even know what is he talking about? Like, there's something, because we got a lot of water here. That's the only logical implication of that statement. But the guy looks and sounds like a middle-aged Napoleon Dynamite.
He sounds like Mr. Slave from South Park.
Ooh, all good. Good one. Yeah, I hadn't even put that together, but yes, most definitely. The other clip we have here, and it might take us all the way to the end of the program tonight, there was an acceptance speech at the MTV Awards of some kind that Chris Pratt received. He got the Generation Award, whatever that means. I have no idea. But his acceptance speech was unconventional and encouraging. We got the audio for that for you.
This being the Generation Award, I'm gonna cut to the chase, and I'm going to speak to you, the next generation, okay? I accept the responsibility as your elder, so listen up. This is what I call 9 rules from Chris Pratt, Generation Award winner. Number 1, breathe. If you don't, you'll suffocate. Number 2, you have a soul. Be careful with it. Number 3, don't be a turd. If you're strong, be a protector, and if you're smart, be a humble influencer. Strength and intelligence can be weapons, and do not wield them against the weak. That makes you a bully. Be bigger than that. Number 4, when giving a dog medicine, put the medicine in a little piece of hamburger. They won't even know they're eating medicine. Number 5, doesn't matter what it is, earn it. A good deed? Reach out to someone in pain, be of service, it feels good and it's good for your soul. Number 6, God is real. God loves you. God wants the best for you. Believe that. I do. Number 7, if you have to poop at a party, but you're embarrassed, because you're going to stink up the bathroom, just do what I do, lock the door, sit down, get all the pee out first, okay? And then once all the pee's done, poop, flush, boom. You minimize the amount of time that the poop is touching the air, because if you poop first, it takes you longer to pee, and then you're peeing on top of it, stirring it up, the poop particles create a cloud, goes out, and then everyone in the party will know that you pooped. Just trust me, it's science. Number 8. Learn to pray. It's easy, and it's so good for your soul. And finally, number 9, nobody is perfect. People are going to tell you you're perfect just the way you are. You're not. You are imperfect. You always will be, but there is a powerful force that designed you that way. And if you're willing to accept that, you will have grace. And grace is a gift. And like the freedom that we enjoy in this country, that grace was paid for with somebody else's blood, do not forget it. Don't take it for granted. God bless you. Please get home safely.
Chris Pratt there at the MTV something awards or another receiving the Generation Award with some words of wisdom for today's youth that is certainly unconventional in Hollywood terms, sneaking in some Christian ideas, some conservative ideas about grace and earning it and productivity and the value of prayer and the existence of God and the importance of being a good steward of your soul and being a good neighbor and a contributor to society. Great stuff. How horrible is it that we have to point out the one guy who's saying something that's actually worthwhile? Now, of course, he couched it in some humor there, you know, some toilet humor at that. But, hey, you got to be able to sell the ideas. And so, you know, we'll take that medicine with some hamburger. Closing argument, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.